On the way home, we swing by the Hob, the black market that operates in an abandoned warehouse that once held coal. When they came up with a more efficient system that transported the coal directly from the mines to the trains, the Hob gradually took over the space. Most businesses are closed by this time on reaping day, but the black market's still fairly busy. We easily trade 6 of the fish for good bread, the other 2 for salt. Greasy Say, the bony old woman who sells bowls of hot soup from a large kettle, takes half the greens off our hands in exchange for a couple of chunks of paraffin. We might do a tad better elsewhere, but we make an effort to keep on good terms with Greasy Say. She's the only one who can consistently be counted on to buy wild dog. We don't hunt them on purpose, but if you're attacked and you take out a dog or two, well, meat is meat.
"Once it's in the soup, I'll call it beef," Greasy Say says with a wink.
No one in the seam would turn up their noses at a good leg of wild dog, but the peacekeepers who come to the Hob can afford to be a little choosier. When we finish our business at the market, we go to the back door of the mayor's house to sell half the strawberries, knowing he has a particular fondness for them and can afford our price. The mayor's daughter, Madge, opens the door. She's in my year at school. Being the mayor's daughter, you'd expect her to be a snob, but she's all right. She just keeps to herself, like me. Since neither of us really has a group of friends, we seem to end up together a lot at school, eating lunch, sitting next to each other at assemblies, partnering for sports activities. We rarely talk, which suits us both just fine. Today her drab school outfit has been replaced by an expensive white dress, and her blonde hair is done up with a pink ribbon. Reaping clothes.
"Pretty dress," says Gail.
Madge shoots him a look, trying to see if it's a genuine compliment or if he's just being ironic. It is a pretty dress, but she would never be wearing it ordinarily. She presses her lips together and then smiles. "Well, if I end up going to the capital, I want to look nice, don't I?" Now it's Gail's turn to be confused. Does she mean it, or is she messing with him? I'm guessing the second.
"You won't be going to the capital," says Gail coolly.
His eyes land on a small, circular pin that adorns her dress. Real gold, beautifully crafted. It could keep a family in bread for months.
"What can you have? 5 entries? I had 6 when I was just 12 years old."
"That's not her fault," I say.
"No, it's no one's fault, just the way it is," says Gail.
Madge's face has become closed off. She puts the money for the berries in my hand. "Good luck, Katniss."
"You too," I say, and the door closes. We walk toward the seam in silence. I don't like that Gail took a dig at Madge, but he's right, of course. The reaping system is unfair, with the poor getting the worst of it. You become eligible for the reaping the day you turn 12. That year, your name is entered once. At 13, twice. And so on and so on until you reach the age of 18, the final year of eligibility, when your name goes into the pool 7 times. That's true for every citizen in all 12 districts in the entire country of Panem. But here's the catch. Say you are poor and starving, as we were. You can opt to add your name more times in exchange for tesserae. Each tessera is worth a meager year's supply of grain and oil for 1 person. You may do this for each of your family members as well. So, at the age of 12, I had my name entered 4 times. Once because I had to, and 3 times for tesserae for grain and oil for myself, Prim, and my mother. In fact, every year I have needed to do this, and the entries are cumulative. So now, at the age of 16, my name will be in the reaping 20 times. Gail, who is 18 and has been either helping or single-handedly feeding a family of 5 for 7 years, will have his name in 42 times.